The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
Off we go into a new week. Thanks for being with us. Chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. If anything goes wrong, it's his fault. He'll screw it. No, he never screwed up. He is perfecto. He is the Tony Gwynn, my late friend Tony Gwynn, behind the scenes. A friend of mine called me last week when Tony passed. I did get a little choked up for a second. It was, sucks. He's not around. Anyways, had a great weekend. Did Mother's Day and did it right. The kids do everything and I just watch sports or work out or chase a golf ball. I'm married to someone who said, I said, hey, what do you want to do? And she said, well, what time is Rory playing? Like, really? Do you want to go to dinner? No, what time is the PGA event on? That's what I have to deal with here. Like, normalcy? No. She makes me watch sports, which is kind of interesting. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. Through the years, that is Desert Financial Credit Union. We do appreciate their support. Lee Steinberg today. Show me the money, right? So Lee and I have chopped it up for a long time. Back in the day, he would call in. This is when I was doing 690 out in Southern California. He'd call in and say, I've got a guy named Troy Aikman. He was over at Oklahoma. He's coming to UCLA. You want him on your show? That's how long back we go. Now, of course, he represents Patrick Mahomes. But I want to talk to him about NIL from a different point of view. It's like these people are sitting here behind microphones just like me, guessing. And so I want to know if Lee's been approached by the 12 to 14-year-old crazy parent, because they're out there. How do I know this? Because they send stuff to us. Hey, man, you want to do something on our 12-year-old? No, I don't care. I just would like for them, I don't know, to have like a normal childhood. I'm not going to sit here and troll and get their video stuff going for them. Come on. It's not happening. I was with a power program high school coach last week. I've just been wanting to sit with and visit with. And I'll do that. It doesn't matter if it's a pro or college or high school. It really doesn't matter. I just like to know what makes a power program tick. And, you know, they get approached when the kids are 10, 11. You know, what's it going to take for my son to start? I don't know. Does he know how to ride a bike yet? Anyways, Lee Steinberg. Are they going to remake Jerry Maguire? Because that movie's based off of Lee, loosely based off him. Cameron Crowe put it together. We all remember the movie with Tom Cruise and Cuba Gooding Jr. and all that. But if they're putting that movie, if they're running it back and remaking it now, they would have to lead with NIL. They'd have to lead with stuff that we would have never imagined. And that movie did so well. So Lee is coming up. John Wilner, Wilner Hotline. None better than John. None. When it comes to the college space, none better than Mr. Wilner. And the story dropped on Friday morning about GCU going to the West Coast Conference. We have said here in this space for years that the West Coast Conference seemed to be an option. Well, it was an obvious option, but it seemed to me to be a place where the presidents of like Santa Clara saying, you know how much it costs for a kid to come here to Santa Clara? Versus how much it would cost for Grand Canyon. My daughter went to GCU, so I know. So you have these institutions that have this, you know, nose up in the air, for-profit, not-for-profit. I mean, the whole deal with that, like there's just a lot of things where on the surface, it's like, oh, of course they should just go play. And you can make the argument, and I'll talk to John about this, that, you know, GCU is in a really good spot. Mid-major, conference they dominate. Here in Phoenix, there are actually more buzz about them than the Pac-12 school across the street. There's just a lot of positives for GCU, but they outgrew this conference. I think they outgrew this conference probably 2-3 years ago, in my humble opinion. But there's more steps to it that we'll get into, John, and that's coming up with Mr. Wilner. Also, I'm going to play the game with John of, look, today is day 183 or 182, 181, where smoke has not come out. No white smoke from Michael Crow's office. We have an athletic director. You know, the Pope sends white smoke that comes from the papal. White smoke comes out when they have a new Pope. Wait for the white smoke, Mr. Crow. No white smoke. So I'm going to talk to John. Maybe Michael Crow is just smarter than all of us. It's entirely possible. He's done some really good things over the academic side. So we're just fools to sit here and say, well, if they don't have an athletic director, they don't know. I'm trying to put myself into why on God's green earth we are still sitting here. What is the advantage of this? I mean, are we at a point where the president feels like, you know what? The head football coach is the athletic director. The head basketball coach is the athletic director of their given sport. We don't have to pay this whole aid. Is he trying to reshape this whole model? Because of course he's Michael Crow. Never mind the fact that programs, both programs have been left in disrepair and both coaches are doing the best they can do. I'm fans of both coaches. When I say disrepair, I believe that both have done their bottoming out, and it's different reasons and rationales and damage that was done. Just, we don't believe in NIL and stuff like that. So we'll talk with John Wilner about, there's a lot going on in college. I have a feeling today, Iron Man, that John and I are going to go long. This will be a long day of Mr. Wilner and I. This is not going to be, I never put a time on it. If I were back on traditional radio, they'd say, look, you have to do 7.5 minutes and you got to end the segment. It doesn't matter how good, how compelling. Very seldom keep a guest over. And you can't talk about this and you can't talk about that. And you can't. So that's why I do this and love it and been doing this now for 13 years. So I have John Wilner with us. I think the news of the day. So over the weekend, the Suns announced through a press relief that Coach Bud is now part of them. Budenholzer, I don't care. I just don't care. The national media calls him one thing. The Suns put out a release with his pronunciation. It's Bud. Some people in his circles from back in the day say, no, it's Bud, and get it right. And it's like, guys, I don't care. I don't care. Here's why. I just want a guy that wins. Very simple. It's not disrespectful. You know, if you're coming here to Phoenix and you have an aging roster, which they do, and you have a team that's built for now, not 2 years from now. When I start hearing that stuff, these are just apologists. These are people that are on a payroll somewhere that has a Suns logo somewhere down the line, somewhere. Or people that are angling for a job with the Suns. They don't want to be truthful. They just want to say stuff. Oh, they were never critical of us. Ah, silly. The games that go on behind the scenes. Me, I just look at it and say, I don't know. I look at Minnesota's roster and they're younger and hungrier and deeper. And I look at Oklahoma City's roster and younger and deeper and looks hungrier. I don't see a team that whines to officials. I don't hear a fan base that whines and cries. We have to get tougher here in town. Like, we should be expecting a championship or nothing. I wrote this over the weekend, and some people are like, oh, that's really harsh. No, it's not. If Coach Bud steps to a podium, not a press release, if Coach Bud, whenever he steps to a podium and says, look, I'm here to win a title in the next year. If I don't, we failed. That's not going to win the room with many. Me, I'd love it. I would just love to not have a whole bunch of PR nonsense. I would love it. I think in this town, in this community, for 30 plus years, there's just a lot of rah-rah, cheer, cheer. Like when I did local TV, I would never, ever, ever consider wearing a purple and orange shirt on. Well, I wouldn't consider wearing a purple and orange shirt anyways. No, in any place. I would not wear a cardinal red color. I would not wear a Diamondback this or that. I wouldn't play that little game. And he looks so nice. He's cheering for the team. No, I'm not. I want the team just to be good. Let's have some grit about it. I don't root against them. I don't root for them. But the reality is we're on the third coach in 12 months. third coach, 12 months. And we're going to get the, well, you know, and look at what KD's going to do and Book's going to do. And it's like, oh my gosh. We have to sit through all of next year. We're not going to know if this is a good move or not until next May. If they're not playing games into May, obviously it's a failure. But to me, it is all or nothing. Remember the Cardinals did that docuseries, All or Nothing? That was great. I love that. Let's be honest. If we don't win, it's not a good year. So, the Suns make their announcement. We'll hear. I would love to have Coach Bud step to the podium and say, let me just say this. In regards to not having a point guard here, I had a really good point guard in Milwaukee, Drew Holiday. And obviously, Drew is doing great things beyond Milwaukee, and it's hard to find a player like that. We're going to look for the best player to play point guard, and we'll have the point guard position addressed when we get to the start of training camp in late September. Does that mean you think the Suns should have had a point guard last year? I'm talking about what's going on in the future. Please don't hyperventilate. Can you address all of the coaches that Kevin Durant has had? I know these are fun little exercises to do. They're just mindless. They're mindless. Well, it's got to be KD's fault. I don't know. I thought he played pretty well last year. He needs some help up front. That would be one of my things. When you go to these press conferences, they'll hand you a microphone and you're allowed to ask a question. You're lucky if you get a follow-up. You're lucky if you get anything more than PR spin in this day and age, which for you guys is unfortunate, because then all it is everything's great. Everything's great. Everything's great. Everything's great. Everything's great. You're so negative. It's funny. Nobody should be happy. Nobody should be happy with what's gone on here. And the basketball team is a ticking clock. How much longer? And then it's over with. And don't give me the, wow, what a great regular season. Man, if we just win 60, yeah, how'd that work out for Darvin Ham and the Lakers? They won the play-in. Oh, what a great, the midseason. What an awesome deal. What an awesome deal in December to win something. We had a great regular season record. Doesn't mean a thing. Stop PRing our way and start delivering. I watched a lot of the Diamondbacks over the weekend. Man, Baltimore has great uniforms. Oh, they're so good. Watch the game on Apple Plus Friday night. Apple TV tried some different things, and I appreciate that. You can also tell in the Apple world that they are about analytics. They get what's going on with analytics. They get what's going on with the sound and the vernacular. They understand on Apple, when they do the broadcast, of what it's supposed to sound like and who they're trying to go to. So I really enjoyed the broadcast on Friday night. I did. Got a lot out of it. Figured a way out. Watched the game on Friday night. That led to watching yesterday and on Saturday. My better half said I want to watch the game. I'm not even looking at Cincinnati tonight or Detroit this weekend. The Dodgers are next week. The Dodgers are next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday in L.A. And the last time they met the Diamondbacks, they stomped all over them. These are out in L.A. Jordan Montgomery, get a few more starts under him. Zach Gallen, they're going to be all right. They're going to be all right. I'm confident. I do find myself wanting to watch them every day, though. I am hooked. I'm going to go to Valhalla this week. I'm going to go to the PGA Championships this week. Later this week, I will be in Detroit to tour the Ford factory and then go to Louisville and see a bunch of cool things, but we'll go to the PGA Championships. And I'm very much looking forward to seeing Tiger Woods in person. He's going to be out of the course. People are talking about how golf this year has not been exciting because Scottie Scheffler has just been blowing away the competition. And, you know, he doesn't really say much, doesn't do much. He's pretty boring. That's a you problem, okay? That's a you problem. You don't want to watch because he's just too good and he doesn't say dumb stuff. He doesn't find himself in social settings. I can't tell you. There's been this whole, why are PGA Tour ratings down? Tiger is not, Tiger's not going to move the needle for everybody. There's people I know that think Tiger Woods is, you know, way past his prime. That's a them problem. Me, as soon as those gates open on Thursday morning, I'm going straight to find Tiger Woods. I'll have the ball cap on. I'll have the on my shade, some sunscreen. I am not going to be working. I am going to be taking in the PGA Championship, and it's going to be great. Very much looking forward to that. GCU, and we'll take a break because we have Lee Steinberg coming up. GCU going into the West Coast Conference. If Gonzaga stays, very good move. We'll talk to John Wilner about this. I am of the opinion that down the road, not tomorrow, down the road, Gonzaga is a much valued brand, whether it's the Big 12 or the Big East. Doesn't matter geographically anymore. You think Stanford and Cal matter that they're in the ACC? Will we see a point where Stanford and Cal say, you know what, we tried this for a year, we're going to go to the Pac-2? Maybe Gonzaga goes to the Pac-2. Maybe they have a basketball-only conference like the West Coast Conference, and the Pac-2 invites in GCU and Gonzaga. Yeah, I'm not going down a rabbit hole here. It's just anybody who's like, wow, that'll never happen. All right. Knock yourself out. So I'm excited, obviously, for them. They've outgrown the WAC. I'm not going to sit here and denigrate the WAC. WAC's been fine. GCU came in. They did their time on probation. We followed this thing since day one. Brian Mueller walked me around their campus way back in the day. Actually offered me a job at one point where he was walking me around the campus. And I see how they've grown. My daughter went there and, you know, It's where they should be in their growth as a mid-major. Go up a little bit further. Okay, now you have St. Mary's and Santa Clara and Portland and University of San Diego, Loyola Marymount, Pepperdine, all those schools. Fine institutions. Not very good at basketball. Gonzaga, if I get Gonzaga twice a year, and we'll talk with John about this, Oregon State and Washington State may be opponents of GCU just because of how the Pac-2 is going to be in their affiliation with the West Coast Conference. So, all right, Lee Steinberg is next, and then John Wilner. Love today's show. Love today's lineup. Again, our chairman of the board is Jared Nielsen. Thank you for being with us. We're back with Lee Steinberg, showing me the money, talking NIL and business of sports. That's next. All right, through the years, I've loved chopping it up with Lee Steinberg. The noted sports attorney is with us for a few minutes. Lee and I go back 40 years of doing this. Lee has been at it a long time, and I can go to Lee Steinberg and say things like Patrick Mahomes' contract or any of that, which is fine. I could even go into, when are you going to remake Jerry Maguire? Touch on that. I don't know, but I want to go through just the laundry list of issues, and you may see some as well, Lee, that are out there, but I get hit up, asked all the time about where NIL is going and eventually down to high schoolers. So I want to start the conversation just on that front, your view of NIL when you're out speaking, as you see it unfold across the sports landscape.
So I think NIL is a case of unintended consequences, which is that in an attempt to give athletes from disadvantaged homes the ability to live better on campus, if the NCAA had just given at-risk athletes $5,000 a year, they'd have been having a great time. That was all that was necessary here, to be able to live at the same standard of living as their non-athletic peers without the ability to be able to work, which non-athletes can do. Instead, they waited too long, and then SB 206 comes along and says that athletes can have marketing agents and market themselves for name, image, and likeness. What's happened is that collectives of wealthy alums have formed at major universities. They pool their money, And it's used for things like recruiting athletes from high school to college. And so it's a bidding war. In essence, it's free agency for the next generation of young athletes, because this university will offer this and someone will top it. And then it gives money to use in the transfer portal also. So it's given commercial opportunities to women, to other groups that were unexpected, and been a godsend. But in terms of what it does to college athletics, forget any concept of amateurism, forget any concept, because Brad, as you said, going in, now 15 and 16 year olds sitting in high school are branding themselves. They're putting together websites and logos and hiring marketing directors. Pretty soon, it'll get so young that you'll have women down in Phoenix looking for the biggest mothers at maternity wards, you know, to deliver their children. It really is no end. So we've seen the biggest changes in the sports scene nonstop rapidly between gambling, NIL, conference realignment. I mean, these amazing changes are occurring, and I don't know that anyone is calculating the long-term consequences.
How often do you get approached by a 12 or 13-year-old's dad or mom? I have to know what's happening.
I do, and I'm not. We run a practice, as you know, that has to do with role modeling.
Right.
So I'm looking for mature, bright students that are willing to retrace their roots, make a difference. I'm not set up to talk to a 13-year-old or a 15-year-old. You know, I have traditionally met these athletes over the last 50 years when they're at earliest juniors in college. And usually they have parents as the screeners. Parents will talk to all the agents. But now you're going to have people branded so much earlier. Take football. It used to be that you wouldn't know a great quarterback until his senior year in college. Mm-hmm. And now they grow up going on the 7-on-7 camps. They hired quarterback tutors. I guess it was never really valid to think that there would be a normal childhood, but this is about as abnormal as it gets.
Do you, Lee, do you find yourself leaning into the kid that is multi-sport, that is not all about the branding, that doesn't really give a rat's about their social media stuff? That through the years, I mean, I remember back in the day when we were doing this weekly, it could be Troy Aikman in a car with you who's thinking about UCLA and life beyond. It could be Drew Bledsoe. It could be Warren Moon. I mean, guys that you just looked at and they went through their careers. Are you finding yourself leaning into and can discern, okay, I'm not going to be dealing with an octopus here with the parents, the quarterback coach, the guru, the this, the that?
It's very challenging because the satisfaction from representing players comes out of that one-on-one relationship between myself, the family, and the player. And it's a matter of employing good listening skills to draw out another human being to understand their deepest anxieties and fears and their greatest hopes and dreams. That's one thing to do when someone's 21. It's quite another thing when they're 13.
And is it the parent that turns you off or gets you interested in this kid? Do you go?
Well, it could be either way, because the values, the parents have done the very tough job of raising an athletic son or daughter with great values, great ethics, who understand the ability to think about second career and long term from the beginning. Now, that's the type of parent that's good to work with. But we're talking about athletes being role models, retracing their roots to the high school, collegiate, and professional community, setting up programs that enhance the quality of life. And that's a critical part of the maturation process for a young man, because the enemy for athletes is self-absorption. You know, enough about me. Can we talk about how you, Brad, feel about me? that self-absorption.
No, I mean, as long as I've known you, you've talked and followed through on the give back. It's not where you are when you're 21. It's where you are when you're 44, 54. When the bumps come along, you've been there and you've been able to help and manage it. You've all stayed true to that, even though I think we're in a completely different space now, Lee. If you're breaking in now, it's like a completely different universe, because not only do you have the NIL side, but you have all these hanger-oners. You have this cottage industry of trainers, and there's some very good ones, but a lot of them are just taking money to teach a kid how to go run. They could do that on a soccer field. But you also have gambling now that you have to deal with. I want to dive into that a little bit. From a point of gambling in sports, you just saw the NBA ban a player. I'd be naive to think that's the only guy out there that's bet on a prop bet. So from your view, all the leagues, is there concern, or is it just, look, we all know that gambling's bringing in huge bucks. We just have to adjust.
Well, I have nothing against gambling. I think it can be fun and the rest. But remember, always gambling also for a select group is an addiction that ends up ruining their lives. And there was an impregnable Berlin Wall between gambling and sports forever until several years ago, when the New Jersey court struck down state prohibitions against gambling. And now you have Bob Kraft and Jerry Jones, two NFL owners, own part of FanDuel or DraftKings. You have the ability to go in the Washington Commanders football stadium and go up to the snack bar and, oh, incidentally, place a bet like you're at a racetrack. You have widespread advertising. And it's got a couple problems. The main problem is this: the existential threat to pro and collegiate sports would be the perception by fans that the games are not played on an even playing field, that they're fixed somehow, that either inside information, as was true in the Jonte Parker situation, he knew he was going to come out of games. He told a gambler he was going to come out of games. And on a prop bet, the over-under, the gambler took the under and made a fortune. So if you think that an athlete's been compromised because of gambling debts to shave performance, or is altering performance somehow and in communication with gamblers, then all of a sudden, pro sports becomes wrestling. It becomes an exhibition. And so this is a very difficult problem. Now, the players are warned all the time not to associate with gamblers. And they're told over and over again, it's part of the standard player contract. But with this amount of money, I don't think it was totally well thought out. How much of a change this is. You're right. There was always considerable sports gambling. It was a hidden secret. But now it's out in the open, and you have 40 million people playing fantasy football every week.
Yeah, as you know, I worked with Chet Forty, the late Chet Forty, and Chet was an addicted gambler from the truck. We'd get a phone call to the back of the radio station, tell Chet he has till 4 o'clock to pay up or else, click. I mean, that's... You know, in the Ohtani situation, I want to take that over to you. You're sitting there with your athletes, and you can't keep track of everybody in their circle, or maybe you can. So the Ohtani situation pops up. I have to believe from your space, it's we have to really patrol who's in touch with our people.
So well, that was sort of a collective failure by whoever was around him, because athletes have financial planners. Mm-hmm. Many times they'll grant the financial planner or a third party power of attorney over their bank account. And then that person has the ability to write checks. It can be good from the standpoint of making sure no bills are unpaid, but it's fraught with peril and fraud danger, as we saw in Ohtani's situation. Here, he's busy. I understand how it happens. And he trusts someone he feels like is his brother and will never betray him. And that person takes $18 million out of his account. And you know that gamblers are not known as the most kind-hearted group. So no one's extending the interpreter, Ide, $18 million. She must have told them that it was Shohei. It's not Shohei's fault, except to let someone that close to him. So Shohei will be fine. It's just another illustration of the potential danger. And that one comes because of a sign over of power of attorney. So that interpreter could withdraw all that money like it was his own.
That's crazy. If they were to do a Lee Steinberg roast, who would be there for you, Lee? Any Netflix anytime soon? Or
oh, I don't know who. You know,
you got
I saw Tom. Oh, I mean, it'd be Troy Aikman, Warren Moon, Steve Young, Bruce Smith, Drew Bledsoe, Patrick Mahomes. It would be owners. It would be general managers. It would be people I've worked on charitable programs with. But why someone exposes themselves to being roasted that way, I have no idea. That would be the most uncomfortable of all situations. I would rather be the roaster than the roastee.
There you go. I'll finish off this, and it's how I started. Jerry Maguire movie. You probably get asked all the time about it, but I've never asked you. Have you thought about redoing? If you had to redo Jerry Maguire's script, you'd have to include things that we just touched on now. Right.
Cameron Crowe has been very out front about the fact he doesn't do sequels. So it wouldn't happen with him. A number of people have talked to me about doing a movie that would be sort of loosely based on my life. And I'm in the process of writing my third book. And this one is Comeback, Resilience and What Matters in Life. So you may see a documentary, or you may see a dramatically scripted show, but it won't come from the team that did Jerry Maguire.
That's good. Good for you, Lee. I appreciate your time and insights as always. Stay well. Thanks.
My pleasure.
There is Lee Steinberg, and we're back with more after this timeout. It is Monday, and that means we chop it up with the great John Wilner. There's so much to do. I'm just going to cancel every other guest. It's like John and I could go through line item after line item after line item. And it's May. May is the time of year where it's the silly season on the speaking tour, where coaches will say things to get alumni all excited. All excited, John. We have the greatest class ever. Those guys over across the border down south or up north, man, you know, they say things.
Yeah.
We get everybody talking. Gives us something to talk about. It's that time of year where we shouldn't be talking about conference realignment, but we're going to start there with Grand Canyon University. So, John, they go to the West Coast Conference, and you wrote a great column about it. I've got some thoughts about it. We were just kicking this around at dinner 2 weeks ago, and we saw one another. So take it away, GCU to the West Coast Conference.
Yeah, realignment never stops, huh?
Yeah.
And this is, you know what, this is overdue in a lot of ways. Grand Canyon has been a, you know, an important addition for the West Coast Conference now for several years. And the president's finally got around to making it official. I think that they really had to, the West Coast Conference presidents really had to work through, get themselves comfortable with Grand Canyon's unique situation, right? The for-profit slash not-for-profit situation.
Yep.
You know, and they got comfortable, and they needed to, because it's an important ad. We've seen over and over and over the importance of strength in numbers when it comes to a conference structure. The Pac-12, one of the many reasons the Pac-12 no longer exists is because it didn't expand back in the summer of 2021 when it could have, right? So here's the West Coast Conference. And they've added Seattle and Grand Canyon starting next summer. They will also have Washington State and Oregon State for 2 years. But Grand Canyon and Seattle, to me, fortify the league, right? Grand Canyon makes it better at the top. right? I think that they are positioned to compete with Gonzaga for the conference championships immediately, and St. Mary's, as soon as they get in.
I don't doubt that at all. My question is, how long are they in the West Coast Conference? My other question is how much longer is Gonzaga in the West Coast Conference?
That's certainly, there was a lot of speculation as soon as they announced this Friday. Oh, this must mean that they're preparing for Gonzaga to leave. But I do not sense that there is any movement right now for Gonzaga to go into the Big 12 or the Big East or even the Mountain West. I don't think Gonzaga will be in the WCC on January 1st of 2030. But I do think Gonzaga is going to be in the WCC for at least several years. I don't think you read this move of Grand Canyon going in to mean Gonzaga's leaving. The Big 12 does not, there's no appetite right now for the Big 12 to add Gonzaga. There's too much going on with the NCAA and this lawsuit and the revenue sharing plan with players. The schools are not ready to add a basketball only school. The Big 12 schools aren't. So I don't think Gonzaga is going anywhere. I think the WCC is going to have both Grand Canyon and Gonzaga for at least 3, 4, 5 years. And that's going to make it a really good league. I think you could argue that the top of the WCC is going to be better than the top of the Mountain West, to be honest.
Oh, there's no question. There's no question you could argue that. Where does Oregon State and Washington State fit into this?
Well, they are 2-year affiliate members of the WCC for basketball and the other Olympic sports, right? Their football is basically playing as a Pac-2. They have the scheduling arrangement with the Mountain West. For basketball, the other Olympic sports, they are affiliate members of the WCC for 2 years, which means there'll be one season, the 25-26 basketball season, which the WCC has 13 schools. In the summer of 2026, most people, myself included, expect that Washington State, Oregon State are going to have reformed a Pac-12 with the top teams in the Mountain West, perhaps with Gonzaga. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe with some schools from Texas, but they would really like to reform the Pac-12. I think it'll have the Pac-12 name because it's more valuable than the Mountain West name, but there will be a lot of schools from the Mountain West joining Washington State and Oregon State in a reformed conference.
Okay, so in that scenario, couldn't Grand Canyon go to the Pac-12?
Grand Canyon and Gonzaga could, in theory, be in that reconfigured conference as non-football members. Right now, they play basketball and X number of Olympic sports, but certainly Gonzaga and Grand Canyon don't have football, so that would, you know, they'd have to be basketball members, which, you know what? I think they might do. And, you know, if you had Washington State, Oregon State, say the top 6 or 8 teams in the Mountain West and Gonzaga and Grand Canyon, that would be a heck of a basketball conference. Yeah. I mean, it'd be really good. And it would be a pretty good football conference, too, with the top teams in the Mountain West plus Washington State and Oregon State.
Is the timing just not right for the Big 12? Deep down, would Brett Yormark love to have Gonzaga and Grand Canyon University? This is just a matter of timing. It's not that they don't have interest. They would pounce on them if there weren't what was going on legally behind the scenes, correct or no?
I think Brett Yormark would, yes. He thinks that college basketball is undervalued in the media space and views adding Gonzaga for sure, perhaps Grand Canyon, and maybe a couple of Big East schools. He views that as a win for the Big 12. But his presidents and athletic directors are not sold, right? They're not sold because they don't know how this whole revenue sharing plan is going to unfold. They don't know if Gonzaga would have an advantage in this revenue sharing plan because there's no football. Mm-hmm. They want to see how the league is going to work with 16 schools. Remember, you know, the Four Corners are going in this summer. They'd like to see what works, what doesn't work before they get even bigger. And I think, frankly, they're just want to see if Gonzaga will bring enough money, right? Gonzaga has to pay for themselves. They have to get enough money from ESPN or Fox to pay for themselves to get in the league. They also need to make it worthwhile for the other schools. Nobody is going to give money away. None of the football schools are going to take less in order to get Gonzaga in the league, right? We saw that with the Big Ten, right? None of those schools were going to take less to get Washington and Oregon into the league. So Fox is basically paying for Washington and Oregon. That was same thing would have to go in, for Gonzaga to get into the Big 12. The TV networks would have to pay that.
Well, and you, when I see the dollar spend that GCU has nationally, okay, they spend like no other. They market. What they've done with the Havocs and the home arena. Sometimes, John, you got to go to a game there.
Yeah.
You'll be like, okay, this puts everything else to shame.
Yeah.
There's
one of the reasons that the WCC wants Grand Canyon is because of the fan base and how that will energize the WCC tournament at the Orleans Arena, right? Because right now, Gonzaga fans pack the place, and then every other school has like 50 fans. Yeah. But if Grand Canyon will bring a ton, so you get the Grand Canyon fans and the Gonzaga fans, and then you've got a real atmosphere there.
Yeah, I'm still of the opinion, just the people that are behind the scenes on this, like Stu Jackson's head of the West Coast Conference, right?
Yep.
Yep. And Stu knows Jerry Klain.
Yep.
Very, 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 very well. Okay, that's how this deal came together. Got it. Brett Urmark knows Jerry Colangelo. Brett Urmark is sitting out there in the Big 12, and I don't know if he knows him as well as Stu does. I'm still of the opinion that we'll see what happens. Like the ACC meetings are going on this week. Poor Jim Phillips is going to get up there and try and sing a song and a dance, and the Florida State fans are not going to have any of it. I still believe, John, you could wake up one day and say it's the Baltimore Colts going to Indianapolis for any of these conferences. I'm not going to be shocked with anything coming up and out the way things are going right now. You could say grant of rights all day long. They can't move because of grant of rights. We'll see. Lawyers can make things happen.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. There's going to be a lot more realignment in the next 2-3 years. The Grand Canyon to the Big 12 is interesting, though, because, I mean, you have to think Arizona State would oppose it with every fiber of their body. Arizona probably would as well. So then all of a sudden, you know, what's going on in that Big 12 boardroom, right? I don't know that Grand Canyon would necessarily bring any kind of value add to the Big 12 because there's not a new media market for them. They don't necessarily have the TV audience following that Gonzaga does. And you'd have to think that Michael Crow and whoever is in charge of Arizona would fight that thing tooth and nail. And it'd be a lot of fun to see that whole thing play out. But certainly, you know, Grand Canyon fortifies the WCC in case Gonzaga leaves. I think that they basically take over for Gonzaga as the standard bearer for the conference in that situation.
Oh, I agree with you. John Woolner with us for a few minutes. Okay. UCLA thought it was great to go to the Big Ten. Their budgets, like, you were on this story. You're the one that broke this story last week from what I saw. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. UCLA is having to pay a boatload, a bleep load of money because they're leaving. Why don't you fill fans in on this? Because this is real. If you're a UCLA fan, this isn't good.
No, it's not. It's not. Basically, this is a story 2 years in the making, right? UCLA leaves the Pac-12 for the Big Ten. That puts the Pac-12 at a big disadvantage. Well, the UC Regents, which govern both UCLA and Cal, decided in December of 2022 that they would approve UCLA moving to the Big Ten, but the Bruins would have to contribute to Cal's athletic department to compensate Cal for the money the Pac-12 was going to lose without having USC and UCLA. Okay. Well, then, since then, the Pac-12 has imploded. Cal has joined the ACC at this big discount, right? They're not getting nearly as much revenue as the other schools. So the Regents concluded UCLA would have to pay a range of $2 million at the lowest to $10 million at the highest per year to Cal as a quote-unquote contribution to Cal Athletics. It's a subsidy. It's from one campus to another in the same university system. And last week, Friday, the news broke. Yeah, we broke it on the hotline that the president of the University of California system is proposing UCLA pay the maximum amount, $10 million annually to Cal as a contribution. So it still has to be approved by a vote, which is, I believe, scheduled for tomorrow, right? We don't know for sure that they're going to vote, but they're planning to. And I have a hard time believing he would put $10 million on the agenda if he weren't fairly confident he's got enough support from the Regents. You never know. They could back that number down to $9 million or $8 million. Whatever it is, it's going to be a big number. The Bruins are going to have to pay it every year for 6 years. So that's potentially $60 million they're going to be funneling to Cal. That certainly is not going to help UCLA's bottom line in the Big Ten, given the added travel costs and everything else. So we will see. UCLA is going to the Big Ten at a competitive disadvantage. There's no other way to put it. And I don't know how it's going to work for the Bruins. I'm very curious to see how this whole experiment unfolds.
So when we hear that the girls we read and hear that the girls softball team missed 2 weeks of being on campus because they had to stay back east for Rutgers and then Penn State. And people are outraged. This is why. Because their travel budget got slashed.
Well,
so UCLA and Cal, are those two ever going to play one another again? Are the Regents going to say, you know what? You guys are going to still play each other, and they're going to give you $10 million. You could beat them 80 to nothing. You still have to write them a check.
You know, I think that they will play each other, and I would not be surprised if part of the agreement that has not been publicized is UCLA basically had to commit to playing Cal. That would not surprise me at all.
Yeah.
You know, and it makes sense, right? I mean, They are sister schools. The Regents look, they don't look at them as separate entities. They call the 10 campus system the university. Cal and UCLA are part of the university, right? They're not separate entities, which is why people are having a hard time grasping this whole concept of one school contributing to another. But the Regents look at it as one entity, right? And one arm is helping another arm in this case. So we'll see. Cal is supposed to lose. Cal's going to generate between, I don't know, 9 and $12 million a year in ACC media money. UCLA is going to be getting 60-something a year in the Big Ten, and that's the justification for this.
John Wilner with us for a couple of minutes. Okay. I'm going to stick with Cal for a second.
Yeah, let's go. Great topic.
So Jim Phillips, the poor ACC. Should I be having some? I mean, Jim Phillips was here with Bill Frieder way back in the day. So here's poor Jimmy trying to sell the ACC. Are we expecting, John, the next 24, 48 hours, something out of Florida State's mouth like we want the hell out of here or something along those lines? Are we expecting news that won't be good for Jim Phillips?
I don't know that there's going to be hard news. There could be some leaks. There could be some speculation out of their meetings. I don't think we're going to see anything definitive this week. I do think we'll see something this summer. I think that the lawsuits Florida State and Clemson have filed against the ACC to get out of the grant of rights, I think we are going to get a settlement this summer that indicates those two schools are going to be leaving, you know, 26, 27, somewhere around there. Yeah. But to me, there's no way they're going to put toothpaste back in the tube here. Florida State and Clemson are out. It's just a matter of figuring out the dollar figure. I don't know that we're going to hear anything definitive at the meetings, though. It's probably a little bit too soon. There's still too much going on legally, you know, with the lawsuits for them to be at a point where they can get, I think, a negotiated settlement in place. But yeah, the ACC is going to, I think, experience the same fate that the Pac-12 did. And then we'll have to see what happens. Florida State, Clemson, North Carolina, they go to the SEC or Big Ten. Stanford and Cal might have to come crawling back to the Pac-2, which is what Washington State and Oregon State are hoping. The other schools, are they going to try to stay together? Are some of them going to join the Big 12? We have no idea, but it is going to be fascinating to see what happens with the ACC.
But you could also look at it. I forget who said it last week. At the bottom teams in the Big Ten and the SEC better start watching their back.
Well, yeah, that was Iowa State AD Jamie Pollard said, you know, we're going to get to the point where the SEC, the top teams in the SEC aren't going to pay for the bottom teams. I mean, I've written about that a bunch. We're already at that point. Alabama and Georgia don't want to be paying for Mississippi State and South Carolina, right? Ohio State and Michigan don't want to be paying for Purdue and Minnesota. But there's no mechanism in place right now for those schools to eject the bottom feeders. Politically and legally, it's probably easier for them to leave than it is for them to boot other schools, which is why I think that we're going to get to the point where there's this Super League, right? And so Washington State, Oregon State, their fate is going to be experienced by dozens of schools across the country in the next 4, 5, 6 years. There's no doubt about that. Why should Ohio State agree to pay for Minnesota? There's no reason.
Yeah. No, I agree with you.
What he said is what everybody's been talking about. He just he said it out in the open, and he's 100% right.
The NIL story of today, where a player goes from Utah State to the University of Washington, his coach went up to Washington.
Yes.
Making $2 million a year. Now, there's NIL money because it was released by the marketing firm. Well, first of all, the marketing firm can inflate the numbers. So let's just throw that over to the side. But let's assume for a moment that there's a shred of truth here, John. The idea that the NBA draft is where people have to go. This is supposedly the worst NBA draft coming up in the history of the NBA draft. Guy can make $2 million a year, which is the equivalent of the 30th pick in the NBA. We're going to see, I think, college basketball be played on a better, grander scale of quality if this plays out right. Or am I wrong on this?
No, I think you're right with basketball and football. The NIL component is causing some kids to stay in school, right? The borderline first round picks. You know what? Maybe I'll stay in school for one more year because I'm going to get $1 million or $1.5 million or $2 million in NIL. It could. I think it's going to make college football and college basketball better products. There's no doubt about that. The Washington case, great. Osabar is the guy's name. He was the Mountain West player of the year for Utah State. I don't know that he's an elite talent. He's a very good player, but Danny Sprinkle, the new Washington coach, coached him at Utah State, so he's following his coach. We don't know how much of that $2 million is guaranteed, but it doesn't matter. It's a good chunk, right? This is the new era. It's going to help Washington compete in the Big Ten next season, and it's going to make college basketball everywhere a better product by having some of these kids stay. Even if half the kids who would have left in the old system end up staying in football and basketball, that makes it a better product. We saw, Michael Penix Jr. and Bo Nix, they stayed. They had great NIL money, so they stayed. In the past years, maybe both of them would have headed to the NFL and the Pac-12 never would have had the season it did last year.
Okay, one last thing before I get you out of here. We are still waiting white smoke coming from Michael Crow's office. Still waiting for today's day 182, I believe. I'm going to try to take his side of the street for a moment here. It's really hard for me to do it, but I will.
I can't wait to hear this.
Yeah, I know. And I haven't been drinking. It's 8:20. Well, this is water, okay? It's nothing else. We're reforming the model of athletics. We don't need an athletic director. It really isn't that urgent. Look, Bobby Hurley went out and signed one of the top high school players in the nation. Kenny Dillingham is going out and signing recruits that supposedly have a bunch of stars, or do have a bunch of stars by their names. Doesn't mean they can play. That's my comment. I'm Michael Crow. In the days of having an athletic director, we just don't need that. Am I on the path here, John? It's day 182.
Yes, you are on the path, Brad. You're on the path to the abyss. I just think it certainly reflects Crow's view of athletics and that it's not there's no urgency around it.
Yeah.
The problem is, yes, Hurley and Dillingham can continue to add players. The athletic department can continue to function. But to me, the issue is that there is a you-know-what load of things going on behind the scenes in college athletics. And without a permanent AD who is working the system, having private conversations with colleagues to get a better understanding of where everything's headed, ASU is at risk of not being ready to pivot when it comes time to pivot, right? They don't have
But I'm Michael Crow. Hey, John Wilner, I pivoted to the Big 12.
Well, no, you pivoted at the when you had no choice, and you completely missed NIL, right? They told Ray Anderson and Michael Crow.
I'm gonna pay my teachers more than I'm gonna pay some student. Let me write on here how much more money my coach is making than I'm making. I don't like it. I'm gonna change it.
Good luck. The problem, if the more, you know, it's like the band member goes the wrong direction on the field, everybody else is going one way and he's going the other. I mean, you do that right now, and you are setting your athletic department up to be way behind its peers in the Big 12 and elsewhere because the landscape is changing. If you're not moving with the landscape, if you're trying to cut your own path, you are at huge risk. We already saw that. They completely missed on NIL 3 or 4 years ago and being prepared for that. And their football and basketball have paid the price in that regard. And they're just catching up.
My basketball coach and my football coach really can just be athletic directors of their own sport. Look at what my football coach is doing. My football coach can go schedule. You can go get trucks to load up gear and get a plane. Why do we have to have all this money tied up? My basketball coach, the arena he's in is just fine. It's just, I'm Michael Crow here. So do I really have to have an athletic director, or can I just have the head coaches of my two big revenue generating sports? And they can go do everything, and I can hire some underlings under them at 3/4 of the cost less, or half the cost less, and I'm just going to reinvent the model. Brad, you can shoot spit wads at me all day long. Wilner, you can write columns all day. I am Michael Bleeping Crow. I've got this figured out.
I've got a new leadership model. That's what he's got, right? Yeah,
right,
and we saw how well that worked. I mean, you know what? Fool me once, as they say. Look, he could do whatever he wants. There's no doubt about that. But I think if he hasn't learned his lesson, then he's, to me, dooming ASU to a second-rate existence athletically. Clearly, his innovative way of thinking for the rest of the university doesn't work for athletics. It's different. And a new leadership model 2.0, where Hurley and Dillingham are basically their own ADs of their programs, it's not going to work. You got to have somebody in charge because there's so much going on that you can't ask those two guys to deal with. They got to be running their programs. You've got this whole other thing, which is where college athletics is going. You got to have an athletic director dealing with that.
And you and I agree. So I'm glad I'm not Michael Crow any longer.
I mean,
doesn't matter where the decimal point is. I don't care about
you. That. You got. I'll give it to ASU in this regard. They are endlessly fascinating with athletically because of Michael Crow. It is just a never-ending source of interest for me.
It's the gift that keeps giving to you, John. That's what it is.
Desert Financial, also the gift that keeps giving for 50 years, right?
That's it. As I say, there's gum under the seats from when Elvis played in the building. It's still the same building. They haven't scraped the gum. All right.
Only at ASU. Yeah. Only at ASU.
Yeah, always something universities, we like to say. Anything else on your mind this week? Did we clean the files out? I think we cleaned the files out, John.
For this week. I mean, and the thing is, almost everything we just talked about has developed in the last 3 or 4 days, right? And there's a report
except,
today.
Except
right?
Michael Crow. It's 182 days that I've got it all
That's
fixed.
True. That's true. And today there was a report, you know, that college football national championship is going to go to Las Vegas, right? So it does seem like we got a few more years here where before it gets back to Phoenix, huh?
A few. It might be 14, 15 years. So I'm just being very negative today. No, I'm not. I want the Fiesta Bowl to have a championship game. I want Arizona State to, like, I don't know, operate like everybody else. And I don't think I'm asking too much here. No, I don't think I am. Our little slice of heaven, we got a lot going on. But our little slice of heaven, there's people around town that, oh, Vegas, we got golf courses. Guys, you're asleep at the switch. You can't let Vegas start. And what's happening? Now we're going to get a Super Bowl. we're going to get a feeler. We're going to get a.
No doubt about that.
You've made me very grumpy today, John.
Yeah, my bad. My bad. You know, but it's all the lack that not getting the college football championship issue, not having an athletic director. You know, that's all part of the same issue, right? I mean, those things are not completely unrelated, because if ASU was operating at a higher level competitively for football and men's basketball, you know, there would be more interest in the community, right? It's all symptoms of the same issue. And frankly, you know, I think Crow bears some responsibility for the broader lack of interest in college sports in the Valley. There's no doubt to me.
There's a column.
That is a column.
It's a column. I'll let you go off that. Thanks.
Sounds good. Thanks, Brad.
And that is John Wilner. We're back with more after this timeout.